You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hi, this is Paul Lazarus. In the 1980s, I produced and hosted a radio series called Anything Goes, a celebration of the American musical theater. Now the Broadway Podcast Network is bringing back these shows. This is the conclusion of a two-part program featuring the composer of Bye Bye Birdie and Golden Boy, Charles Strauss. In January of 1982, Strauss came to my apartment in Manhattan and discussed everything from his collaboration with lyricist Lee Adams to working with Ray Bolger and Linda Lavin.
Let's talk a little bit about your collaboration with Lee Adams, who you've worked with for most of the shows that you've written. How do you work together on a song?
Well, Lee and I have a very close relationship. I must say, I love Lee Adams, and I think we've known each other long enough that I might say the reverse, too. We've been close all our lives, our professional lives together, over 30 years. And it's gotten so that we do each other's work, you might say, but I wouldn't put it that way. He's not really a musician as I am, and I'm not a lyricist as he is, but nevertheless we contribute to each other. I rely on his being suggesting certain things to me, certain ideas, and I think he relies on me for doing the same thing for him. So there would be times where it would be just a phrase musically and lyrically that I can't remember whether he suggested I do it up instead of down. And where I said to him, gee, this should be the title, not that thing you say, it's about that second thing you said. You know, It's one of those things. We worked very closely that way together. And I think one of the reasons that we don't work as much together now is Lee just is not as, Lee's not a New Yorker. He's not as hungry as I am sometimes. He doesn't like doing as much. And he's probably right. He lives a much more healthy life than I do. He's always said that I work too much. I mean, I think I do, but I can't help it. I just love doing it so much.
Yeah, the different strokes and all of that.
Yeah.
Have you ever had your marital tiffs? I mean, if collaboration
is
a marriage?
Yes. I would say they haven't been tiffs as much as the fact that I think sometimes people who are too close over too long a period of time tend to use one another, manipulate one another, and I think Lee and I both have been in our career guilty of doing that, pulled back from doing it, but nevertheless do it. I mean, you find it in marriages all the time and close friendships that aren't collaborative. You know, somebody has to make the other person feel guilty or has to make the other person feel sorry for him or has to use his aggressions. And I think both of us have done that. And I think both of us are aware of it. And I think both of us are going to work together again, I hope, for many years.
Still with Lee Adams and lyrics, with a new book writer, Mel Brooks, in this case.
Right.
Have you ever done a show before?
Had Mel?
Yeah.
Well, he worked on Archie and Mahitabel. I don't think he had inaugurated it. I'm just making up this phrase now, but I think it's accurate. He's a stand-up writer. He likes to talk it. As a matter of fact, the movie that he did, The Producers, after All American, he told Lee and me every scene of it throughout the rehearsal of All American. It was as though he didn't want to or trust himself to simply type it out. He would try it out. He would then do scene three for us.
Had you thought that Once Upon a Time would be the hit of the score?
No, I certainly didn't. Lee and I had written a version of the song once in a review, which we didn't feel was right in Green Mansions again, and we rewrote it. But as a character song, we thought Mel had a scene in which Ray Bolger and Eileen Hurley had to meet and to discuss somehow the exposition of where he came from was important. There was a romantic glow to the scene, but it was basically about, I come from here and this is what I did in my life. And we wrote the song to kind of help with 8 pages of dialogue. The only person who thought it was going to be a hit song, oddly enough, was Tony Bennett, who recorded it. But it didn't work that well in the show. And that's a very funny thing about shows. Sometimes the best songs don't work in the dramatic sense.
So many factors that work in the theater,
Lee Adams, together with Charles Strauss at the piano, performed the song Once Upon a Time at the Lyricists and Lyrics Evening at the 92nd Street, YMHA.
Once upon a time, a girl with moonlight in her eyes put her hand in mine and said she loved me so. But that was once upon a time, very long ago. Once upon a hill, we sat beneath a willow tree, counting all the stars and waiting for the dawn. But that was once upon a time. Now the tree is gone. How the breeze ruffled through her hair, how we always laughed as though tomorrow wasn't there. We were young and didn't have a care. Where did it go? Once upon a time, the world was sweeter than we knew. Somehow, once upon a time, never comes again.
Are there any funny stories about Ray Bolger at that time? It strikes me as that he's the kind of person that would generate.
Well, the only one, I've told this before, so, but it's perfectly true that the only funny thing that I can think of was that he did play the part of a Slavic professor, and decided to do it in a Slavic accent. And I remember one day during rehearsal, Mel Brooks walked into me and he said, "Why is that man speaking Japanese?"
What a country! What a country! What a crazy place to be. 180 million people and not two of them agree. What a country, what a country. Every day a new frontier. What a rootin' tootin' six gun shootin' country you've got here. You ride in a bus and you travel all day, and still you're only 2 states away. It's terrific. What a country. And you pass more towns than you can name, and every main street looks the same, full of traffic. It's amazing. And there's so many rivers and farms and herds, and who can pronounce all those Indian words? Shenandoah, Chattahoochee, Susquehanna, Tuscarora, Allegheny, Wallagoochee. What a country.
What a country.
What a country.
What a country. What a happy place to live. A million mountains, billboards, motels, rivers, rushing to the sea. What a country.
What a country.
What a country.
What a country.
I could give a mighty cheer.
Oh, that rootin' tootin' six-gun shootin' country.
Sunny, honey, of a country, oh brother,
you've got
Ray Bolger as Professor Stanislaus Fedorsky in the original cast of All American performing What a Country, a song by Lee Adams, and my guest today on Anything Goes, composer Charles Strauss. Golden Boy in 1964. I was curious because I went back last night and read the Odets play because I hadn't ever looked at that. Why the change from an Italian white fighter to a black fighter from Harlem for the musical? I'm sure that obviously was the generating factor of the show.
Oh yes, no question about it. It was because that had become the larger truth in American life. The Depression didn't exist as such, so an Italian boy who had to fight to the top was only true in a very period sense.
Mm-hmm.
It was true because the play is true and beautiful, and but for it to be a black man became more American. It became more of a pressured situation, as the Depression had made it with the poor Italian, and because it was more particular, to my mind anyway, more pressured, it was more universal. I think Golden Boy exists even more strongly as a black boxer.
Did Sammy Davis Jr. come after that, or
no? That was one of the few, if not the only, show that Lee and I ever wrote where it was prepackaged in a sense.
Uh-huh.
There was a producer, Hillard Elkins, who said to Sammy, "Look, I can get Clifford Odets if you do this." And Sammy said, "Well, if you can get Odets to do the book," and then he said to us, "I got Sammy Davis to do it. If you will do it." "Oh, really? Gee, Sammy Davis. Wow." And then I think we've compared notes at one time. Nobody had committed themselves to do it at that time.
He just went around getting everybody to say yes.
But then it was right. The unfortunate part about that show was that Clifford, after working for 2.5 years with us, died the week before rehearsal.
I know that is.
And didn't live to see it.
Lana, Lana and Joe, somehow it sounds so right. Somehow you feel what I feel too. I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you. After all the nights of wanting you, lying there loving you, hating you, tonight I'm touching you, tasting you, world, you're gonna see. We'll make out somehow. Here's my girl and me. They can't hurt us now. Here's our chance, it's not too late for us. Grab it fast or life won't wait for us. I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you.
I wanna be with you, stay with you every day.
Lorna,
with you right or wrong.
You're my Lorna.
With you every way.
Oh, I'll be so good to
with
you.
With you I am strong.
I still
girl and me, and we'll tell the world, make way for us. It's a sweet and golden day for us. Now the music starts to
Sammy Davis Jr. and Paul LaWayne singing I Want to Be With You from the score to Golden Boy, a 1964 work by lyricist Lee Adams and Charles Strauss, who is my guest today on Anything Goes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
It fascinates me to Clifford Odets, you know, one of our really greatest American playwrights, working as a librettist. Was he? I mean, being a librettist is such a different thing from being a playwright. You have to be so generous about the material.
Right.
Did he have any trouble with that?
Yes, tremendous amount. He wanted the show. He sensed the show. He sensed the importance of the show, but he found it very difficult to unlock his heart from his original inspiration. There were many instances where he said, but that's my best scene. You know, we did the usual songwriter's tricks of taking the best scene and putting a song there.
Yeah.
And the connectives and the elimination, the additions, he found it very hard. Mm. And sometimes he would rewrite a whole scene, stay up the whole night, because he always wrote, with us at least, in a feverish pitch. And then we'd come in the next day and it was essentially the same scene.
Clifford Odets said to Lee and me regarding a song we wanted very much in Golden Boy that it could not be done because the drama that took place immediately before was too contradictory. Those of you who know the story of Golden Boy, it's a sensitive young man tells his father he's going to give up music for a life of violence. The old man's heart is broken, and the young man feels very guilty. The song Lee constructed following this was a sardonic goodbye to Harlem and would include jokes, tap dancing, and a great deal of affectionate put-on among the young men's street pals. Clifford was a venerable playwright. It shouldn't have worked, but musicals are curious animals. The song was an instant hit and only enhanced the dramatic structure of the play. Was it Donald McHale's staging? Sammy Davis, a great song and dance man? Johnny Brown's humor? Or Lola Falana's great walk? Personally, I think it was Lee's lyric.
Don't forget 127th Street. Don't forget your happy Harlem home. Don't forget 127th Street. No siree, there's no slum like your own. I remember summer evenings at my window
watching all those muggings down below. Oh no, Joe, don't forget 127th Street, a little bit of heaven, wherever you may go.
Your first comic strip musical was 1966. Yes. It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. Interesting team, David Newman and Robert Benton, who later did Bonnie and Clyde, the film.
And Superman.
And Superman, and also Robert Benton, Kramer versus Kramer, wrote the book for that show.
Yeah.
I know so little about the show, oddly enough. I mean, I assume it's a...
Well, it was a... if you saw the movie Superman, it was exactly that, with a little change of plot. It was exactly that tone. That's what it was. We were 10 years too early on that. That was, one of our big problems.
The history of musical theater, every now and then it crops up that someone goes
I think 10 years later, in fact, convinced by the grossness of that movie, that 10 or was it 15 years later, well, we would have been a much different kind of success. As it was, we had a kind of critical success, and I've always liked the show, but it didn't work on Broadway.
Hal Prince was the producer and director on that show.
Producer, director, yes.
That was the first time you worked with him.
First time, yes.
Michael O'Sullivan played the villain in that plot, and he played a mad scientist who despairs of having never been awarded a Nobel Prize. Yeah. And he sings that wonderful song you wrote called Revenge.
Yes.
It's terrific.
He was Meshuggah.
Look at me, a 10-time Nobel Prize loser. In 1938, I earned my PhD with a masterful hypothesis in colloid chemistry. I was getting set to publish when, much to my surprise, Richard T. Zsigmondy won the Nobel Prize. And for what? For work on the heterogeneous nature of colloid solutions! My field! In 1949, I thought I had it made. My work in light diffusion put my colleagues in the shade. But then my hopes were shattered by some Hindu in Ceylon. They gave the prize in physics to Sir Chandravi Raman. To work on light diffusion, the Raman effect. Damn it, it should have been the Sedgwick effect! Revenge, revenge, I'll have it on them all. No single slight will I forget. I'll show no mercy, you can bet. They'll all get theirs the day I get revenge. That dopey Wolfgang Pauli for his work in fission. I used to help that punk with long division. Fermi for his brilliant neutron system. That Bobby wouldn't know a neutron if it kissed him. But the thing that really drove me to a fury, they gave the prize to Harold Urey. The shocking thing about the matter is, my heavy hydrogen was heavier than his. Revenge. Revenge, oh, it will taste so sweet. A misanthrope, yes, I might be an outcast of society. Think what you like, but just give me revenge, revenge. It really goes way back. My parents hated me. You see, my birth surprised them. Mom was 63. Nanny smelled of Clorox, and boarding school was hell. I'll show you Dad's and Mom and Nanny and Alfred B. Nobel. Revenge, revenge, that's all I live for now. I'll make them win. wince and cringe and cry. I spit in their collective eye. I'll have one thing before I die, and I'll have it by destroying the world's symbol of goodness, Superman.
The other song in that score that I particularly like, and it's the one that's really emerged from that score, is You've Got Possibilities.
Yeah, that did pretty well.
That was early in Linda Lavin's career.
Yeah.
What was her character? She played a character named Sydney, but who was that?
She was the, at the Daily Planet, she was the associate to the bad columnist who was played by Jack Cassidy.
Oh.
And she had a real crush on Cassidy, who spurned her and used her at every opportunity that he could to do her legwork. And she sings You've Got Possibilities when one night Cassidy stands her up for a date and all, and she has nowhere to go and nothing to do, and she's mad, and she spies Clark Kent. You can barely see him for the woodwork, of course, and she says, oh, hell, why not? I got nothing to do tonight. And she says, come here, you know, and he's
right.
Amazed that anybody would even notice him.
Sort of a double-edged song, because while she's singing it, obviously...
Oh, she's toying with his shirt and all, which he has to cover. It was quite funny, and Linda was wonderful in it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she is one of the best musical comedy performers and has been trapped by great success as an actress now,
right.
But she's the best musical comedy performer.
Simply terrible necktie, the worst bearing, just unbearable. What to tackle first? Still, you've got possibilities, though you're horribly square. I see possibilities underneath, there's something there. Collar, pure Peoria, fat hat. Queen Victoria, this suit has to go. Still, you've got possibilities. Let us give it a try. I see possibilities, maybe more than meets the eye. Don't back away. Come on, unbend. Why can't I be? Bite you yet, you'll be shy when I get through. Come on and roll, you tiger, you. Somewhere way down deep in you there's life, no doubt. It's just been asleep in you, let me bring it out. You've got possibilities, maybe even a lot. Red hot possibilities, why be shy and ill at ease? I see possibilities, you don't even know you've gone.
Linda Lavin, in the 1966 show It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, produced and directed by Harold Prince, with a score by Lee Adams and Charles Strauss.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? The film you are about to see is based on really true incidents that actually happened. We know you are a real sophisticated audience, and what you are about to see is some mature story. In 1925, there was this real religious girl, and by accident, She invented the striptease. This real religious girl in 1925. Thank you.
William Friedkin's The Night They Raided Minsky's, which I finally got to hear that score when you lent me the record, I think is terrific. And the title song and that number, Take 10 Terrific Girls, are wonderful.
Yeah,
that,
we liked that.
That must have been a really fun film to work
it
on.
It was, except for the tragedy of Bert Lahr's death, which changed not only the film, but it changed
that
the film
right
totally.
In the middle of the shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd forgotten.
And it was a major decision on Norman Lear's part. And United Artists to go ahead with it, which they did, and then the film was masterfully cut, almost created, recreated certainly by Ralph Rosenblum.
To keep him in the film.
To not only keep him in, but to suddenly give the picture an entirely different emphasis. It became a different story because that part, which was a major part, had to become, I don't know, kind of a cameo thing.
Right.
The whole emphasis of the film was changed, and Ralph and Norman recreated that.
Can you just describe the atmosphere and set up these songs? I'm going to play them both. It was Minsky's is obviously the burlesque house, and
the Take 10 Terrific Girls was simply a number in the in burlesque. We just imagined, and then were blessed with a tenor who could sing that way.
Yeah,
it was wonderful, and that was a number that they did. Norman's idea and Billy Friedkin's idea was always to show the perspiration, so to speak, on the girls. It wasn't just a burlesque, the glamorous aspect. It was really life on the Lower East Side, the various religious and New York tensions and things like that, along with the burlesque.
Many other ladies I have lied to, many were my happy nights, and yet the night they raided Minsky's is the night I can't forget. And the night they ended prohibition, oh, Delancey Street was plenty wet. Yet the night they raided Minsky's is the night I can't forget. We're watching Fifi from Gapery in her artistic dance, when just by chance her dress tore into, what was she to do? And then the whistle blew, followed by the cops, and every man turned pale. Oh, what a brawl, they arrested us all. Fifi finished her dance in jail. Now I'm very old with just my memories, now my biggest thrill's a cigarette. But the night they raided Minsky's is the night I can't forget. The brawl, they arrested us all. Fifi ended her dance in jail. Now I'm very old with just my memories, now my biggest thrill's a cigarette. But the night they raided Minsky's, but the night they raided Minsky's, but the night they raided Minsky's is the night I can't forget.
Rudy Valley. From the original soundtrack of The Night They Raided Minsky's, singing the title song by Lee Adams and Charles Strauss.
One thing about Lee, if I may say so in front of him, is this love-hate relationship with the theater. He'd rather, I think, be sitting around in the country reading or traveling than writing a new show, and he always seemed rather annoyed when I'd call to say I've heard about a new idea. Nevertheless, here's some of the love part of that relationship. Two theater songs, burlesque in this case, and from a film, not a musical this time. Many are the ladies I have lied to, many were my happy nights, and yet the night they raided Minsky's is the night I can't forget. On the night they ended prohibition, old Delancey Street was plenty wet. But the night they raided Minsky's was the night I can't forget.
We were watching Fifi from Gay Paris in her artistic dance. When just by chance, her dress tore in two. What were we to do? And then the whistle blew, followed by the cops, and every man turned pale. Oy, what a brawl, they arrested us all. Fifi finished her dance in jail. Now I'm very old, with just my memories. Now my greatest thrill's a cigarette. But the night they raided Minsky's is the night I can't forget.
I have a secret recipe, concocted with much skill. And once you've tried my special dish, you'll never get your fill.
Take 10 terrific girls, but only 9 costumes, and you're cooking up something grand. Mix in some amber lights and elegant scenery, then stir in a fine jazz band. Then add some funny men
and pepper with laughter. It's tart and tasty, I know.
Then serve it piping hot. And what have you got? A burlesque show.
Listening to Charles Strauss Part 2, the conclusion of a two-part series. Associate producer Jeff London. Anything Goes Backstage with Broadway's Best is produced and hosted by Paul Lazarus. For more information, visit anythinggoespl.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate and follow us. Thanks for listening.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.